Welcome to the Dürr conference call. Ralf Dieter, CEO, and Carlo Crosetto, CFO of Dürr AG, will present the Dürr Group's preliminary figures full year 2017, followed by a Q&A session. I will now hand over to Mr. Dieter, CEO of Dürr AG.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon or good morning for those of you in the U.S., and welcome everybody. It is a great pleasure to present to you Dürr's preliminary figures for 2017. I'm joined by my colleague Carlo Crosetto. Our year-end closing is already stable enough to be able to give you the most important key figures today. I will start as usual by summarizing the highlights and providing an overview of our results for 2017. Carlo will then give you more insights into our financials. I will then share our division's performance with you, and followed by an overview of the latest developments in our digital marketplaces, and finally, our initial outlook for 2018. We start with page 3. In 2017, we passed many milestones and achieved the 7th record year in a row. Incoming orders and EBIT reached new all-time highs. Net profit surpassed the 200 million euro mark for the first time in our history. Our results for 2017 are all in line with or above our guidance, with the exception of cash flows. We also reached our targets for the paint and final assembly system division, but as we are currently seeing ongoing pricing and competitive pressure, we have launched the optimization program Focus 2.0 to reach our EBIT margin goal of 6-7% by 2020 again. At HOMAG, we surpassed our targets and the positive trend should continue. We are on track towards reaching our 2020 targets. And last but not least, we are pushing our Industry 4.0 activities strongly throughout the Dürr Group. Looking at 2018, we expect further sales growth and an increase in our cash flow. Let's now turn to page 4. Incoming orders and sales increased by 10% in both cases, adjusted for FX effects and the sale of Dürr EcoClean. Our EBIT and net profit improved by 7% and reached new highs. Cash flow was down due to the changed prepayment pattern of our automotive customers. Page 5 compares the Dürr Group targets for 2017 and the figures actually achieved. We reached most of our targets and surpassed our goals for incoming orders and sales. Cash flow was weaker than expected, as just explained. On page 6, you can see that order intake reached 3.9 billion euros for the first time, despite the sale of Dürr EcoClean, which had a negative impact of roughly 150 million euros on incoming orders. In China, new orders were up 28%. Both the machinery and painting business were up sharply. Markets in Europe increased slightly, while the North American market returned to an expected normalized level. The emerging markets contributed 51% to the total new orders, up from 42% in 2016. Carlo Crosetto will now take you through our financials.
Thank you, Ralf. Ladies and gentlemen, let me continue now on the page 7. Our gross profit was unchanged year on year, this despite an intensive price pressure within the automotive industry. While we saw lower margin in our paint and environmental business, the machinery activities were able to hold on to their high gross margin levels. R&D expenses were raised by 10% in order to further strengthen our competitive edge, especially in the field of digitalization. SG&A declined by 3%, despite a strong sales increase, which underpins our strict cost consciousness. Our reported EBIT included extraordinary effects totaling 8 million euros, compared to minus 50 million euros in 2016. I will show them in detail later. The financial result was down by 7 million euros, mainly due to lower income from investment. Exceptional income had arisen in 2016 from the sale of our 11% share in Tech4Aero GmbH. It is worth mentioning that the financial results includes the full interest expense on the bonded loan issued back in March 2016. This was partially only included in the previous year's figures. The tax rate dropped to 25% after 27% in the previous year, as only a small amount of tax was payable in the extraordinary income generated from the disposal of EcoClean. Consequently, earnings after tax climbed by 7% to 202 million euros, translating into earnings per share of 5.6 euros compared to 5.3 euros back in 2016. On page 8, you can find a detailed overview of the extraordinary effects of the last 2 years in comparison. This will also help you to understand our reported EBIT and the operating EBIT guidance for 2018. Let's now move to page 9. Net financial status improved to 192 million euros, the highest figure since 2013. That means before the acquisition of HOMAG. At 120 million euros, cash flow from operating activities was well in positive territory. As you can see in the chart, our cash flow were influenced by an increase of net working capital by 171 million euros. Within net working capital, the payment balance with our customer dropped by 118 million euros, but still remained favorable for Dürr. This reflects the fact that more customers in the automotive industry are negotiating more aggressively payment terms. With just over 1 month days working capital, our working capital remains more than acceptable. We assume that net working capital will stay at these levels or at most increase slightly in 2018, so accordingly cash flow should improve compared to 2017 figures. Page 10 deals in detail with the composition of our net working capital. As we understand, there may be some questions here. Whereas inventories and prepayments rose by 57 million euros, the increase of 155 million euros in total trade receivable was substantially more pronounced. The overview of page 11 of our work in process in comparison to our progress billing showed the mentioned reduction in our payment balance to minus 85 million euros. We consider a slightly negative level or a level at around zero to be normal in the future. Although this cap is tightened, we're not planning to finance our customers' factories, of course. Page 12 shows our key financial items. Equity grew by 73 million euros to 904 million euros at year-end. Our cash position was reduced mainly due to a mortgage loan repayment. Return on capital employed again reached an outstanding level of 40%. Page 13 showed CapEx of 88 million euros. One major investment was the new campus in Shanghai, to which almost 1,100 Chinese Dürr employees are now relocated. A further key item of the CapEx agenda was the modernization of our IT system with the goal of digitalizing our processes even stronger. Across the group, we expect CapEx spending of around 80 million euros in the year to come. I will now hand back to Ralf Dieter, who will outline our divisions, summarize the programs of our Digital Dürr strategy, and provide you with, of course, with our outlook for 2018.
Thank you, Carlo, and I move on to page 14. Paint and Final Assembly Systems achieved double-digit growth in order intake in 2017. Strongest region was Europe, while Chinese business also picked up. With order intake coming to 384 million euros, the final 3 months of the year were the strongest quarter of the year. Full year sales went along with the growth in order intake, rising by 3%. Due to rising competitive and price pressures in paint system business, adjusted EBIT fell by 14% to 70 million euros. However, as expected, we were able to achieve an EBIT margin of 6%. Page 15 describes the current business environment in the paint and final assembly business. The present challenging market conditions of the last 2 years have been characterized by price-aggressive competitors and higher OEM spending on new car technologies. This has prompted us in the first quarter of 2018 to launch an optimization program, which was initiated by our board colleague Jochen Weihrauch, who took over on January 1st the responsibility of our paint and final assembly systems division. We have started this optimization program despite the fact that the competitive environment might improve in view of the current slight increase in project volume. On page 16, we present the Focus 2.0 program in detail. Key aspects of Focus include reductions in production and product costs, efficiency gains in processes, as well as in organizational structures and further enforcement of growth opportunities such as in service business. The Paint and Final Assembly System division will be adjusting its structures and costs so that it's able to decline low-margin contracts and concentrate on more profitable business. At the same time, cooperation with the other divisions will be further improved to avoid duplicate work and to harness synergistic effects. For example, in expanding our digital business. In the medium term, the goal of Focus 2.0 is to push the EBIT margin of paint and final assembly systems back up to between 6 and 7% by 2020. As things currently stand, we project extraordinary expense of between 5 to 10 million euros in 2018. although additional costs cannot be excluded as the program proceeds. At the moment, it is not possible to place any precise figure on the planned benefits of this initiative, although it is expected to generate double-digit savings. Page 17 shows that e-mobility is an opportunity for Dürr as it broadens our customer base and creates additional need for automated production solutions. On this page, there's a list of a number of new OEMs currently awarding contracts for EV projects, or discussing them at least. The large number of completely unknown companies shows that the market is in a state of flux. As you know, we currently realize sales between 200 and 300 million euros with different EV manufacturers. Turning to page 18, order intake for application technology rose by 3% in 2017 and exceeded the 600 million euro mark for the first time. The division service business achieved strong growth. Demand remained consistently high in Europe and picked up noticeably in China. Operating EBIT increased by 9%. The industrial product segment in this division, which has been addressing the non-automotive painting market since 2014, posted an increase in revenues to 22 million euros. But however, it continues to be in the investment phase with negative EBIT contribution. In the medium term, we are convinced that the segment through which we want to address sectors such as glass, ceramics, wood and furniture offers interesting growth and earnings potential. Order intake in clean technology systems contracted by 6% in 2017 as a number of orders that had been expected for the second half of the year were shifted into the first half 2018. With many projects in the pipeline, however, we expect a substantial improvement in 2018. Sales climbed by 11% to 185 million euros thanks to the larger order backlog. Despite this, however, EBIT dropped by 45% to 3.4 million euros. And the unsatisfactory earnings situation is mainly due to persistent losses in energy efficiency technology business, where low energy prices are the reason for the low demand. And we respond to this in the second quarter of 2017 by discontinuing loss-making Dürr Temair GmbH business in large heat pumps. The business discontinuation costs came to 5.3 million euros and were allocated in full to the corporate center's EBIT. Further measures for achieving a sustained improvement in earnings are being implemented with the new management. On page 20, the figures for measuring and process systems are not fully comparable with the previous year due to the sale of Dürr EcoClean. The 22% decline in order intake in this division was largely due to the disposal of EcoClean, while the remaining activities such as balancing, filling, and testing technology held almost steady at the previous year's level. The remaining activities achieved a single-digit increase in sales and more or less unchanged EBIT, although extraordinary expenses arose in Q4 for the realignment of our filling technology company Akramco. Akramco now concentrates solely on filling equipment for the appliance industry and stops serving the automotive industry. I will go to woodworking machinery and systems more details now on page 21. In 2017, HOMAG posted a sharp 17% gain in new orders, achieving record order intake of 1.366 billion euros. The strong demand was spread over all main regions, with business proving to be very strong in China. One important growth driver was a strong demand in the furniture industry for highly automated integrated production lines with batch size 1 capabilities. And the book-to-bill ratio came to 1.1. EBIT rose by 91% to 86 million euros. Of this, an amount of 9 million euros was related to purchase price allocation for the HOMAG Group. The operating EBIT margin increased from 6.6 to 7.7%. After extraordinary effects, the EBIT margin increased to 7%, up from 4.1% in the previous year. Page 22 shows that we are steadily increasing our R&D spending. The digital transformation is currently the most important trend for innovation at Dürr. We are working intensively on expanding the Atomos IoT platform as well as the Loxeo and Tapio digital marketplaces and the development of digital services and our data analytics offerings. Page 23, we outlined our digital strategy to you in detail, and we did so in the Investors Day in Darmstadt last October. Accordingly, I will look at page 23 only briefly. The only marketplace is Loxeo for Dürr and Schenck customers, and Tapio for the woodworking industry, are instrumental in boosting customer perception of our company as a provider of digital solutions. Using Loxeo and Tapio, plant operators can evaluate data, map their production activities digitally, and purchase digital services and apps. In this way, Loxias and Tapio act as hubs for digital production optimization for our customers. At the beginning of 2018, we established inside Dürr the digital factory where 70 Dürr specialists develop these applications. On page 24 and 25, I have set out examples of some of the applications that can already be used on Tapio. The MES board, for example, displays information on the production process and the status of all workstations. It sends warnings when a critical value exceeds or falls below a certain level. And with data safe, machine data losses in case of a machine went down are belonging to the past. Data will be stored securely in the cloud and will be made available immediately when needed again. Another app is a machine board where machine-related information is available in real time to operate machines optimally. To give you an example, before driving to business, the operator can remotely start up the gluing unit of this edge bending machine and can immediately start production when entering the carpenter's workshop. Page 26 shows another important cornerstone of our strategy, the service business. In adjusted terms, service revenues rose by 1% in 2017. Service growth in our mechanical engineering activities was between 5 and 50% up. Looking ahead to 2018, service business is also expected to grow in the paint system business again. The necessary measures have been defined in the Focus 2.0 program. All told, service margins remained at a very satisfactory level. And in 2018, the service business is expected to reach the 1 billion euro mark for the first time. Going to page 27. As you know, M&A, a continuous portfolio optimization, form an important part of our strategy. In 2017, we completed only one bolt-on acquisition, the company called Test Devices, Inc. We are still seeking a further major acquisition with sales up to 1.5 billion euros. However, our acquisition criteria must be met and the valuation must be reasonable. For us, the sale of Ecoclean was a logical step as its machinery is primarily used in the conventional powertrain technology with moderate perspectives, and this business generated only below average margins. You are presumably familiar with the two charts on page 28 and 29, and according to industry experts, the upward trend in both the automotive and the wood industry will continue. PwC expects annual growth of 3.4% in the automotive production between now and 2022. CSIL projects a similar increase in global furniture production. Both industries have in common the fact that the emerging markets, particularly China, are the most important markets. China accounts for just under 30% of global automotive production and 40% of global furniture production. Production of EVs is being pushed the most heavily in China, for example, and we are adjusting our strategy accordingly. Coming now to our outlook on page 30. As things currently stand, we expect sales of 3.7 to 3.9 billion euros in 2018. This means that sales will probably be higher than in 2017, even though the Ecoclean Group, which was sold last year, contributed 48 million euros in the first quarter of 2017. Cash flow, as mentioned, is also set to increase. Order intake is expected to come to 3.6 to 3.9 billion euros. Orders in the paint and final assembly system division could drop somewhat due to the decision to focus on more profitable orders. And adjusted for extraordinaries, the group EBIT margin should come to 7.4 to 7.8%, thus remaining more or less on a par with the previous year. EBIT margin after extraordinaries is expected to reach 7.0 to 7.5%. It should be reminded that last year's EBIT included positive exceptionals of 8 million euros. And at this stage, we project extraordinary expenses of around 15 to 20 million euros in 2018, of which Focus 2.0 should account for 5 to 10 million euros, as already mentioned. We expect rising cash flows in tandem with a slight decline in capital spending in 2018. And we assume that net working capital will increase only slightly. A detailed outlook can be found on pages 40 and 41 of your handout. Our forecast assumes that the global economy will continue to grow, that no economic dislocations occur, and that the political environment remains reasonably stable. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your attention so far. As usual, there will be no press and analyst calls when we publish our annual reports on March 22nd. We will be pleased to answer any questions you might have about the annual report over the phone and after it's published, but now we will be happy to answer any questions you may like to raise. And I hand over to Mrs. Pakonen.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin our question and answer session. If you have a question for our speakers, please dial 01 on your telephone keypad now to enter the queue. Once your name has been announced, you can ask your question. If you find your question is answered before it's your turn to speak, you can dial 02 to cancel your question. If you're using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selection. One moment, please, for the first question. We've received the first question. It comes from Ingo Schachel of Commerzbank. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yes, thank you. I have three questions. The first one would be on your free cash flow, and thanks for providing so much detail on the prepayment and work in progress situation. The questions on free cash flow would be, I think, if you deduct the 120 million prepayment swing from the 170 million net working capital cash outflow, there's still 50 million of other net working capital built up in other segments. Can you just shed a little bit of light on in which machinery segment you actually saw an increase of normal net working capital? And with regards to project-based prepayment situation, I was not surprised to see that at some point the total balance goes down to 85 million, but I was actually surprised that it happened more on the asset side than on the liability side. Is there anything we should know about the this very strong revenue recognition in excess of billings? Is there any other factor behind it, such as very strong year-end execution, which you could not change in revenue recognition policy or anything else? The second question would be on the margin quality in paint and assembly systems, and then you've mentioned throughout the year already that there would be a roughly 1 percentage point margin pressure. Based on what we now know, just wanted to know whether you would still regard this figure as valid, and if so, whether it includes restructuring benefits or even restructuring costs, or whether that was meant to be rather the number of underlying price pressure in the order book. And the last question, just very quickly on service, whether you could confirm that the 60 million restatement there is just the EcoClean effect, and maybe comment briefly on why the modernization revenues were apparently lower.
Okay, Mr. Schachel, I start with the last one on the service side. We had in all divisions service growth, but in the paint and final assembly systems we didn't. But there were some basically some modification orders we did not want to take because of their risk profile, and that was mainly the reason. We expect that to grow again in 2018. On the margin quality, our guidance for PFS or for paint and final assembly system is 4-5% EBIT, and by the effects we see today or the extraordinary effects that should be included. But as I said, also we are not through the program yet totally, so there might come up other things, but then we would tell you in the next call. And for the free cash flow?
Yeah, I'll take over the other two questions that Ingo Schachel had with regards to net working capital and basically the net balance of minus 85 million. With regards to the last question of minus 85 million, of course, what we are seeing is that the gap of advanced payment in relation to work in progress is still negative, but has decreased from last year to 102 million. We're still in positive territory, but we think that this gap of 85 million will probably be what we consider to be somehow a normal level going forward, between minus 80 to minus 50 million in this range, although it's very difficult to predict that exactly. You did ask indirectly if we were expecting a certain advance payment at the year end, and the answer to this is yes. We were expecting to get a major advance payment from one of our big customers in China, which did not happen by the 31st of December. And this is affected, of course, some of the financials, like net financial status, et cetera, at year-end. So this number did not materialize and will probably materialize in the first quarter. In general, the impact of the increase in working capital, which is part of of the explanation of why our operating cash flow and free cash flow are where they are today is driven by changes in net working capital. We don't think that this change in net working capital at this level will continue in 2018. We are expecting this to maybe be in the range of 30 million-50 million, which then means that we would have an improvement of our cash flow in 2018 by this difference. So as I said, we are much more positive in terms of cash flow development in 2018 versus year-end 2017. Your question about the small gap in net working capital really comes from an increase in inventories. I think actually on page 10 you can see that there is about a 50 million increase in inventories and prepayments, and it's a bit spread across all the divisions, but it's mainly Hallmark, which is driven by the fact that they are spinning a bigger wheel.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Sven Weier of UBS. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen. A couple of questions from my side. Maybe we can take them one by one. First one is what you said on M&A, and I was just wondering if you could give us an update on HOMAG, if you already exercised the 7% option and where you stand on potential discussions for buying more from the family. That would be the first question.
Okay, that we can answer directly. We are in the process to execute this call option, which we had in our contract, 7%, and it will be finished most likely by Q1. And we don't have further talks about, because the share price at the moment is, I think it's somewhere in the 60s, is not a base for discussion. So we have time. We have no need to do that now.
Okay, fair enough. Second question is also on HOMAG. I was just wondering how much of the 200 million order increase you saw last year was coming from China.
I think in China we had in total we had 142 in China, and the increase compared to last year was nearly 50-60%, so 70 million from China out of the 200 roughly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then the rest then really comes from Europe and the US equally split, or?
Yeah, we had a nice growth in all territories. I have the numbers not exactly in my mind, but I can say, for example, US was, I think, between 15-20%. We had Europe close to 10%. Germany was above 10%, I think 11-12%. And even the rest of Asia also was close to 2 digits. So it was a very nice growth all over the world.
Mm-hmm. And then with regard to the medium-term financial targets for HOMAG, where I guess you still give us an update at some point, I guess the midpoint of your sales guidance points to 10% growth for this year. I think your Italian competitor has just given an update on an estimated average 10% growth for the next 3 years. So you're both growing much stronger than the market. Is that something, you know, like your Italian competitor, you could commit also to beyond 2018? Because I remember you saying at the Capital Markets Day that you see this kind of growth for the next 1 or 2 years. But any new thoughts on that?
We are discussing this a lot, how long this growth will continue in that speed. And what you have to know is that in the years up to 2000, maybe 14, 15, the furniture manufacturers did not invest much, basically on a normal replacement level. Now it's a wave of changing the production equipment into this lot size or batch size one production. I was in China to visit a customer like that. It was very impressive. And the secret behind is that when you want to have a lot size one production compared to a mass serial production, you need 6 times more machines. And that's driving the business. And the Italian competitor you mentioned is also a good position. It's much smaller than us, but we are benefiting from this. And particularly HOMAG for larger projects, we are the number one choice. And you will see in 2018 also some larger contracts coming in.
Okay, understood. And the last question is just regarding your paint shop guidance. If I understood you correctly, you said you had in the pipeline like 200 to 300 million of EV orders potentially. I was just wondering how much of your paint shop order intake was coming from EVs in 2017.
In 2017, that's the number I gave you. That's a 200 to 300. And we are working. You saw the chart with all these names. Some of them you have never seen and heard about, and some of them are serious. Some of them are just thinking about. So we are very careful. But out of this list, we have already three orders. One we secured before Christmas, and one just in the last days. So I think there will be more coming this year. But I think it's maybe the same volume, like 200 million, 300, because they're smaller orders. In the last year, we had also a bigger order from in Californian company, but they are also expanding, so it could be also a higher number. I personally think it would be higher, maybe.
Mm-hmm. And so those projects where you're being more selective is more on the traditional OEM side, I would guess.
That's a right guess, because you remember, we do basically the same what we did 2005 when we had the market price for paint shops, which was broken in that days, and we said the only way to get the prices up is again to not to take everything which is out there, and I think that's what we are now starting. So we should be able to decline on an order or to step out of a quotation process when we see the margin is not enough or not satisfactory.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Dieter.
My pleasure, Mr. Ryan.
Thank you. The next question is from Jack O'Brien of Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi. Good afternoon. Jack here. So the first question is just on your margin comments related to PFS. You talked about price-aggressive competitors, and I was a little surprised to see that you don't expect to be back to a 6% margin until 2020. So can you just flesh out a bit the pricing you are seeing and how long you expect that to persist, because it seems like it may go on for some time.
Can we do the following? It's very comfortable just to answer question by question. Then
perfect.
So the answer for your question is that the experience I made in the years 2005 to 2008, it took us 2 to 3 years also to get the price level up from a customer acceptance point of view. Because this paint shop pricing is out there, customers can calculate a lot, and it will take time to convince them to pay more again. You see?
Okay. And is it just still confined to one of your large German businesses, or is it others as well?
No, it's particular one.
Okay, perfect. Second question is just on cost inflation. We've seen a bit of a trend from lots of European companies about wage inflation, raw materials, input costs, and so on. Is that a consideration for your business in 2018? I guess it is, but how should we think about it?
You mean the latest IG Metall tariff deal, which has been closed now?
But I was also thinking about, you know, we've heard reports of wage inflation in Germany, for example, being an factor.
That's what I meant. Yeah, that's the wage increase, which was, let's say, surprisingly high. Mm. And yes, we always calculate in our budgets a wage increase, but this one was higher than budgeted, so we have to we have to swallow some additional burden.
What sort of year-on-year wage inflation or sort of EBIT headwinds should we consider in our models?
You mean for this increase in labor costs?
Yeah, across the group.
For Germany we have it, and it's...
Yeah, I mean, for the German entities, we have roughly calculated we'll have an impact of about 10 million euro on our bottom line, but of course the expectation is that we figure out ways how to compensate this with additional efficiency. So it's additional pressure in achieving the results, this general salary increase that was approved. It's not a positive development, but we are not changing our guidance because of this.
Okay, great. Thanks. And just one final from me. You talked about auto OEM's focus on new products as also a consideration. How are you seeing the current brownfield environment in light of that? Are you seeing sort of auto OEMs more focused on these new products and, of course, you know, EVs, AVs at the expense of sort of footprint and hardware, or what's your experience currently?
The experience we have made out of several talks to several OEMs is due to the fact that they also have problems to forecast how many EVs or plug-in hybrids they are selling. Most of them are considering or planning, although or already executing, revamp in brownfields with additional special stations to assemble those.
Okay.
Yeah. So there are, but also there are some, I would not say who it is, but you can imagine a very large OEM who is now planning to build a plant in China just for EVs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a traditional OEM. It depends on the volume they are thinking they can sell. But for us, it's an opportunity because we have additional work in the assembly lines. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. I guess I was also just thinking about America and you know, okay, the order intake for 17 was more normalized. There's always been this opportunity, I suppose, from the old equipment, old installed base of paint shops and assembly lines and so on. Is there evidence that these are starting to be replaced, or is this still a hope?
No, they, in the last years, they replaced already a lot. These programs, I think when you talk about the big, the Americans like GM or Ford or Chrysler, they are doing this continuously, and also we are in discussions about major revamps. The timing is sometimes difficult to foresee, but it also needs a lot. A large brownfield project is more complex than a new paint shop to build. It's like when you build a new house, it's easier than to renovate an old house.
Yeah.
And so we have longer lead times in terms of technical discussions, project preparing, and so on. But we are optimistic that in this year we also have good business in the U.S. and Mexico for that.
And the margins much better on that work?
Well, actually, you generally can say yes, but it's also higher risk because you have less time and you have a more condensed, far more condensed schedule. And as I said, when you change in house, you have sometimes surprises when you start taking things out and replacing the new ones. So that's, but it's reflected the margins, they are generally better, yes.
Great, thanks. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Philippe Laurent of Berenberg. Please go ahead, your line is now open.
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen. Philippe Laurent from Berenberg. Just a quick follow-up, actually, on the networking capital questions that we had already in the call. Just wanted to know from you if you could provide us a better understanding of how the mix of activities between plant engineering and machinery business has evolved in the past few years, especially since the consolidation of HOMAG, because I understand this has an impact directly on your networking capital ratio. And also, if you could give us, kind of a an outlook for how we should think about the net working capital turnover in days, maybe going forward in kind of, let's say, a range or something like that.
Yes. So thank you, Philippe, for these two questions. I mean, going back to your first one, basically, if you look at the construction side of the business, basically the gap of work in progress and advance payment has been reduced, and it's slightly negative, but it's not as big as it was before. So that is the impact. Interesting enough, if you go on page 11, you see work in progress from small series production and billing excess of cost on uncompleted contracts, small series production, so on the asset liability side, and you see that the gap has actually increased, which means we were able in the machinery business to still work quite well in getting advance payment in excess of work in progress, which is actually improved. So contrary a bit to our own expectation that the gap would actually deteriorate as the construction business doesn't have the same amount of advance payments, we were able to partly compensate that with our machinery business. And that's probably because our machinery business is doing really well and has to catch up with orders. So that's basically the trend that we are seeing. So, you know, a smaller gap on the construction business, still positive for us, but smaller. And thanks to good management, and, you know, we are still holding on to some decent advance payments with regards to machinery, mainly around HOMAG, to be fair. So HOMAG gets 30% down payment when it gets the order, 60% before delivery, and then the remaining 10% usually depends on how the contract has been negotiated, guarantees, and so on. So So far, so good. With regards to the day's working capital, I indicated in my initial remarks that we are looking at about 30 to 33 days, roughly. I think it's the correct number at the end of 2017. And we think that, you know, day's working capital should stay at a month or slightly above a month and should not change dramatically. So we think that this adjustment we see in 2015 is probably the new base.
Okay, so is it fair, I mean, going back to the page 11, actually the gap between the asset side and the liability side, especially for the construction contracts, this one has narrowed to nearly zero, and you were saying before that you don't expect like big movements here, so actually the balance of net repayment, if I can call that like this, is actually going to be driven only by the machinery business.
Well, I think, you know, end of 2017 is a bit extreme. You know, I think it should be slightly better than zero going forward, but it should be in this range. And then, yes, you're right. On the smaller machine, let's say on the normal machinery business, we are somehow still in positive territory if you compare the 94 million on the asset side versus the 167 million on the liability side. So, yes.
Okay, thank you very much. And then perhaps just a quick housekeeping question on your industrial products business. I got that actually sales were about 22 million in 2017. Would you be able to give us a little bit of color as well on the kind of EBIT margin or EBIT that you were generating in that segment?
No, I don't report on 22 million businesses, but I said it's still an investment case. So the EBIT contribution is not positive yet, but we are close to zero, I guess, next year, and then we will start up. It is a little bit of long term, but it's we see a lot of potential there.
The focus really on growing the business. So,
yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Alexander Hauenstein of DZ Bank. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hello, Alex Hauenstein, DZ Bank. Thanks for taking my questions. Actually, two of them. First, with regard to the order book quality in paint, could you give us a sense when the quality might actually at least somewhat pick up again? I mean, with regard to the latest bookings, should we think that things are still in a downward mode? And when could you actually think to see the first positive impact? And the second question is with regard to the orders in the Americas overall. I guess it's mainly paint related, but probably not only. Maybe you could remind us about the main parts here. And is there an overall change in trend here at the horizon, and when could that happen? Thank you.
The first question I understood, and you're asking whether the order is, I think we are at the bottom because we changed our strategy due to the focus program. Yeah? So if a project comes along where we don't see that we can make a margin, we would maybe step back. And so, yes, it should be better going forward. But if, as I said before, it will take a long time and it will be a very slightly increase by increase because we have to get our customers used to pay a little bit more again. For the question about Americas, I didn't get. Can you repeat that, please?
Yes, when I look at your order intake, overall the Americas orders were down year over year. And I was wondering when you could expect a trend here at the horizon, and actually in which of the segments should we focus here?
Okay, so the orders were down because in 2016 we had an extraordinary high order intake in the U.S. and Mexico.
Yeah. Yeah?
So 18, 17 for us was a high level but normalized, and we see and hope for the same level about this year. HOMAG, for example, was up in America, as I said before, and about 10%, and so the main portion still comes from the paint and final assembly business there.
Okay, and thank you. But actually, all in all, it's flat probably year over year in 2018 compared to 2017, right?
We would be happy if it's flat from the paint and fine assembly business. But on the woodworking side, we also expect a slightly growth again.
Understood. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Christian Kors of Warburg Research. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yes, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my questions. First, maybe on the measuring and process systems business, quarterly earnings have halved in Q4. I know that you do not like quarters, but maybe could you shed some, shed some light on it, whether there's some structural impact we have an eye on, because your revenue trend seems fine. Oh, yeah, let's go step by step. That's question number one.
Okay. You're right. I don't like quarterly views because they don't say much. But your question in that case is, I think, is a valid one. Two things. We had a special effect out of this Acramco restructuring, which was not high, but it was $1 million roughly. And you have to consider that EcoClean, compared to 2016, EcoClean was in, and in the Q4 16, EcoClean alone made $8 million EBIT.
Okay.
They had a huge, that basically all the EBIT more or less came in the third and fourth quarter. And when you look at then, when you deduct that, then you look at the EBIT return on sales margin, it's about 14%, and it was still in very good quarter. Even it looks from the quarterly view different, but that's the effect.
Okay, yeah, that puts it in a much more moderate perspective. Okay, that's clear. Secondly, regarding the paint and final assembly systems division, you mentioned countermeasures, and among these countermeasures, you also listed capacity adjustments. Does this mean that the envisaged margin recovery back to 6 to 7% might also come, at least partially, come at the expense of lower top line going forward?
No. The capacity adjustment is, you have to mention the following. You know how much we have grown in that business in the last years. And that has led to the original principle where we said the large projects should go through Germany or the Bietigheim system center alone. We had countries like Spain or Italy or France or UK in the last years asked to take over higher portions or even complete projects in order to execute all the many projects we had. And this we turned back. Yeah? So the capacity adjustment will be happening mostly outside of Germany to reduce those countries again to business centers, which means service and sales, and not executing large projects. And that's the main measure. But we look in all areas. So the Focus 2.0 is a huge program. We look also at overheads. We do everything. And cost of productions, manufacturing optimizations, and so on. It's a very complex but comprehensive project. Maybe we will explain later in the year at some occasion, yeah?
Okay. And then the very last question just relates to R&D. Expenses have grown by 10% last year, and just wondering whether this trend is going to continue via your digital strategy, or do you expect that it will spring back to the levels we've seen in the years before?
No, we will continue at that level, maybe even a little bit higher, because in digital business also speed is of essence, and we are speeding up those activities, and because I think it's very, very important for our future.
So it will grow?
It will grow, but not on the 10% level anymore.
Okay, that's clear. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Thank you. The next question comes from Tim Rokossa of Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yeah, thank you very much, Tim from Deutsche. I'd like to follow up on the previous last question with my first question. When you talk about these capacity adjustments, I understand what you mean by cutting down the satellite offices and so on and so forth, but at the same time you're also guiding for lower order intake and lower revenues, at least at the lower end and the midpoint for this division. Why wouldn't restructuring or optimization effort like you're running it right now actually also result in lower top-line growth at the same time?
Because we said that we don't want to take every order which is out there. We want to be more selective. And Mr. Okosa, you remember, I think you were around 2005 already, wasn't you?
No, 2008, but still, yeah.
I'm sorry if I'm getting old. So, but in that time, we also had the target to reduce the volume, which basically means to be able to restrict it, because otherwise when you have all these people in this organization, you need orders to keep them busy, you know what I mean? And this we want to reduce, this dependency on filling the capacities. That's why we want to reduce them. The funny thing was in 2005, we planned to reduce, and we were then overwhelmed by all the orders because we never reduced, but we will see how this time will work. But in minimum, we want to be prepared for that.
Okay. So the interpretation is there may be less growth or no growth, but it will be more profitable.
That's the objective, yes.
Okay, all right.
But not in 2018, because here we will still have an impact. It will continue 2019 and 20 to grow again.
Okay. My second question is then following a bit on the free cash flow side that we discussed already so far. Carlo, when you're saying you expect an improvement from 14 million last year substantially, that's obviously not a very strong base to expect a substantial improvement from. Are you happy to quantify this a little bit further with respect to our modeling? And does it primarily reflect the situation that you talked about earlier at the Capital Markets Day, that you see this OEM prepayment coming back eventually and really just being more of a temporary phenomenon? Or is that something that will still remain the case, and also obviously with your moving increasingly towards China, you already touched on the Chinese customer. We all know they are a little bit more difficult to get paid from in general versus the European customers. Are these two phenomena still prevailing, or is that changing right now?
Well, I was answering the question with regards to changes in working capital. So what I was referring to, that I don't expect the increase in working capital to increase at the level we have seen in 2017. You know, maybe another 30 to 50 million could happen, but, you know, we think the adjustment has happened. So, yes, so that was the question I was trying to answer. Your question is more generic on cash flow development. I think that beyond the fact that we think that we won't see this level of deterioration and increase in working capital, we do expect that our cash flow numbers will improve. And that's what we've also said in our guidance for 2018. So, yes, the cash flow will be better. There are certain effects here and with advanced payment received or not received, as I was addressing as well. So that's what I see happening. With regards to the gap that has decreased between advanced payment and work in progress, I mean, I cannot really predict the future, but I think that OEMs have become, at least the classical OEMs, have become smarter and more aggressive in their negotiations. So the premises that we have is that we don't see this gap widening again for the time being, and this is the assumption I would use for your model. Because, the reality is right now a very tough situation for the general supplier machinery industry.
But Carlo, let me add this. So, of course, Adita, it's also very difficult to predict, because we have behavior. One customer, for example, before Christmas was asking us whether we want to have another 50 million as a down payment, and he asked for more discount. And because we have enough cash, we said, no, we don't want to give more discount. We don't need the money. Yeah. So one negotiation can change the whole structure here, or not the structure, but the figures quite dramatically. So that's part of the big paint shop business.
You had a last question. Sorry, I forgot that one.
That was all.
That was all?
That was it, yeah. I have another question on your slide 17. Sarita, you first of all said that you already have taken orders, then you said you are at least talking about orders. I look at a lot of really interesting names on the slide. We have Fisker that filed for Chapter 11 a couple of years ago. We have Faraday Future, which certainly has some financial difficulties as well when we look at the situation in the States right now. Then at the same time, we have Tesla, which is probably a very credible customer of yours. You talked about the 200 to 300 million order intake from electric cars. How do you really decide who of these guys, who are certainly all very interesting, that are approaching you and asking for orders and projects, who do you work with?
That's a very good point. But just to correct you, you're totally right what you said, but if you take the case of Faraday, this has started again, but in China. And here they have proven 1 billion cash on hand to build a factory. So then we start discussing. So what happens to, you have names like Weltmeister, which you have never heard about. So what we do, we go in early stages, help them to, with our consulting group, to plan a factory quite roughly in a layout, cost, and so on, and then we investigate about their money. Otherwise, we would never deliver anything or start seriously working if we would not be sure that they can pay. Yeah. Or, for example, Thunder Power is on here, which is a customer. We have Socon as a customer. They all have money. FMC also. So we are, let's say we have an additional complexity, because we normally with Daimler or BMW, we don't need to think about whether they can pay. Here we have to be more clever in the sales phase to find out whether they are capable to spend the money.
Maybe just on this point, we look at EVs like we take a look at country risk. So we have an additional process established when it comes to EV where, depending on the amount in question, there is a higher, stricter level of approval that can go up even to the group CFO if we're willing to take new businesses from these players. So we try to protect ourselves, but it is much more difficult than, of course, a classical OEM.
Great, thank you. And thank you also for the very detailed presentation with dividend and guidance and everything. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Daniel Klein of MainFirst. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yes, thank you very much. Can you hear me?
Yes, very well.
I would like to start with slide number 51, where you speak about the dividend policy. You mentioned there could be a share buyback program possible in 2018. Would you like to elaborate what this is dependent on?
To talk about it, what dividend we will have in 2018
At the bottom of the slide, it mentions
the
share buyback approval. It could be possible in 2018, and I was wondering what the criteria are for yourself to make the decision to go ahead or not.
Yeah, I think what we are saying is that our priority is, of course, to find the Hallmark II and use this cash for other activity. But on the other side, we don't want to put ourselves under pressure. We have in mind that this is an option for us, but a 100% decision if we're going to do it in 2018 has not been.
It's more unlikely than likely.
Does that mean you're making progress on Hallmark II?
No, we want to be prepared if we find Hallmark II.
Ah, okay. In terms of the 18 guidance, would you like to elaborate what FX assumption you have baked in, maybe in absolute EBIT terms, including both translation and transaction? That would be rather helpful.
About 2 to 3%.
When you speak about the one-offs in 18, you have made a distinction between Focus 2.0 and another, what I would say is a black box to me so far. Is this related to clean tech and will be booked in the corporate center? Because I haven't seen any remarks on the other segment margin guidance.
Okay, that's the interesting thing. The difference between what I said for the focus program and the total sum is the purchase price allocation of Hallmark.
Okay. Are there going to be any one-offs related to clean tech in 18, or is this off the cards? Because I was wondering, in the third quarter, you were mentioning there might be incremental one-offs in the fourth quarter. They haven't materialized. Is this nothing you would expect for 18?
That's not, if something is very small.
No, what we have done is TEMEA, and we are, of course, continuously reviewing all these other energy efficient activities. But to answer your question specifically, there are no plans at this stage to make some major restructuring except the normal business improvements.
Okay. Maybe one last question on Focus 2.0. You mentioned this is work in progress, so I fully understand you cannot be more specific. But maybe for us from the analyst side to better understand how lengthy this program will be, would it be a fair working assumption to pencil in the same amount also for 19, or do you expect to have all the costs fully in the books already in 18?
I would expect that most of the costs should be in 18.
All right. That's from my side. Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Thank you. The next question is from Jasko Terzic of Bankhaus Metzler. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yes, good afternoon. The first one is also related to the EV business. Could you give us a rough split of the order intake you mentioned? Is it related to paint shops, or is it also related to final assembly?
As normally, I would not like to do those splits, but because it's today, I do it for you. Out of this 200 or 300 million last year, maybe 100 was final assembly and the rest was paint.
Okay.
But this was a special situation which will not repeat in 2018, I guess.
Thanks. That's very helpful. And the second one is regarding pricing. Are EV clients, or do the orders show a different pricing except from the risk that they could pay, or is it more a question of a revamp versus a new build?
I think those customers who are not very, as of these new EV ones, who are not very experienced in building plants are more valuing our expertise and our consultancy to support them in doing this. So they, I would say that their margin is not on the last squeeze like when you deal with the traditional ones.
Okay, thank you. And then on your guidance for paint and final assembly, you are guiding 4 to 5% margin, which is almost yeah, almost 200 basis points down. So could you confirm that you see at least 1 percentage point price pressure, or is it even higher?
But I see, can you repeat that? Sorry.
You were guiding that you see 1 percentage point price pressure, and now when I see that the lower end of your guidance is 2 percentage points below that what you have achieved in 17,
yes.
Can we assume that price pressure is just 1 percentage point, or is it even higher?
You can assume it's higher, because I think we had the worst price levels were starting and end of 16 and going through 17. I think, and I hope so, that our special competitor has also learned that this is not a good business model. And so we hope that, and we don't see signs of improvement. It's tough, but I think we have been on the bottom, rock bottom out of it, and but it's 2% you can see as a market price decrease, yeah.
Okay, very good. And the final one is on the MPS guidance on orders, because when I look at the upper end of 460 million, it's some 80 million below last year, and I thought that EcoClean should have contributed with around 50 million. So are you guiding organically and decline even on the upper side, or do I misread that?
I think that you misread that. Let me see. Yeah, but you're right, because if you take EcoClean out, then you are at 480 in 17,
exactly.
And then you are at 460. Let's say it's conservative, one hand. On the other side, also, we had in 17 still a special, basically the outcome of or the finishing of a special hype in the filling business, where we had a high order intake. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thanks. That was very helpful.
Thank you. The next question comes from Peter Wattner of Baader Bank. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yes, hello, gentlemen. Some question regarding HOMAG. So you're experiencing currently extremely strong demand. I think you have the opportunity to be selective. It has been mentioned that also Piesse is experiencing good demand. Does this have any positive impact on the pricing environment? So does this support at the end your prices you generate and your margins?
Okay. First of all, this market is also competitive, yeah, no doubt. And also margins under pressure, because everybody wants to eat from this growing cake. I think the margin improvements, we have increased margins, but not so much by market price increase, but more about doing our homework in the HOMAG focus program, where we re-engineered machines, have a lower cost of production, more efficiency, and all these measures are more and more showing impact on the numbers. That's why we are also optimistic by a given market environment, by a given price level of machines, that we can further improve in 2018 and the years to come. Because there's still a lot of homework to do, and we are very happy about the fast improvement of HOMAG, because it was faster than we expected, as you know, and but we have still a lot of potential there.
Mm. And then I think your key problem at the moment is to bring out the stuff you have in the order book. So how are you proceeding in ramping up capacities, and is there also some differentiation in the production location? So
yeah.
Are you ramping up your Chinese factory stronger and so on?
You said it all. We do all. We ramp up China. We have increased very much Poland plant. We are also shifting the value add that we source out things we produce today, which we don't produce anymore tomorrow, like mechanical parts. So we have all kind of measures, and we have temporary sites also in Germany. So it's a huge task. It's a nice problem to have, but it's very complex. But we are successfully managing that. The biggest problem we had partially was the supplier side. Big names you all know, which could not deliver enough and on time. So, but fortunately, the customers of HOMAG are more patient than automotive customers.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is a follow-up question of Philippe Laurent of Berenberg. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yeah, just a quick follow-up, actually, on the margin target that you have for PFS for next year. Do I understand that correctly, that actually in the 4 to 5% EBIT margin margin you anticipate, you have already recognized these 5 to 10 million of extra costs.
Yes.
Yeah, so that means actually it's more like a clean margin of around 5%, which is in line with what...
Yes, you're right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Thank you. At the moment, there are no further questions. I would hand back to you.
Yeah, thank you, Mrs. Balcone. We had a lot of questions today, more than last time, but I think that has to do because we looked at the whole year, not at the quarter, and which we, anyway, prefer. So, ladies and gentlemen, first of all, thank you very much for your questions, and as always, Carlo and myself enjoyed the discussion. I hope that you have now a good view on our 17 figures and also about our outlook. And we will talk again after our Q figures will be published on May 16th, Günther. Ne? That's the time. Thank you very much. And Mrs. Balcone, also thank you very much for guiding this conference here.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attendance. This call has been concluded. You may disconnect.